Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, strap on your hiking boots, grab your trusty walking stick, and don't forget your machete as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
This is Monsteropolis, a show about monsters, anomalies, and legends, the official show podcast of Small Town Monsters. I am one of those Los hosts, Seth Breedlove, joined as always by my pal,
Mark Matzke.
What do we got to talk about real quick? Announcements.
There is a big trip coming up.
Next week.
Next week.
Yeah, we're in Maine, Portland, Maine, for the fourth annual International Cryptozoology Museum Conference. I saw they added the museum to the title.
Okay.
So it's the International Cryptozoology Museum Conference. Mark will be speaking. Andy will be speaking. I will be there for the premiere of Terror in the Skies. And we'll be doing a Q&A, which I'm assuming you guys will probably play a part in as well. And Adrian will be their producer. If you're a loyal listener to Monsteropolis and you see Adrian at any of our events, make sure you get her to sign your posters because she's often overlooked, but she is a vital part of the STM crew. So, and she might have actually created the poster because she did the Mothman of Point Pleasant alternate poster, and she did the Bray Road Beast poster with the that was her work. Her and Zach both created that poster, but mostly that was Adrian, and then Zach did the fonts.
We can put Andy behind the table,
yeah,
and she can come out behind.
Get your picture,
yeah.
Get your picture with her.
Yes.
But yeah, we'll all be at that event, and we will be showing Terror in Skies. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the building of the Peninsula Python legend.
And Andy is speaking on growing up
in the world of cryptozoology.
Growing up crypto,
yes.
Andy's, as we all affectionately call him, the crypto kid. So let's get into this week's topic. Do I need to give any info on the event? It's Portland, Maine. It's at the, I don't know where it is, but it's Thompson's Point in Portland, Maine.
I'm under the impression that the conference is going to be back at the hotel. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That is what I thought.
It's at the Clarion Hotel in Thompson's Point in Portland, Maine. And
other speakers include Cliff Berrickman, Anna Nicaris, Ken Gerhard.
Jeff Belanger,
who seems like a cool dude. I think I'm actually going to be with someone. It might be his wife I'm with next weekend or last weekend when you're listening to this. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're all going to be there. The STM family will be there, and we're really excited to show off Terror in the Skies as well. And it's a very fitting event to do it, given Lauren's place in that story. So, let's get into this week's topic, which is ancient architecture. I hit upon this idea when you asked, just because it's something that I've always been kind of interested in. And then recently, Allison Jornlin actually sent me some info on some ancient architectural sites found near Louisiana, Missouri. Now, I could not get the PDF to open last night when I was trying to do my research. So unfortunately I have nothing.
Oh, rats.
Yeah. I have nothing that I can actually talk about with this, but that was kind of what got me thinking in this direction was, and, that's one of the reasons that we're doing the Bone House scene, which I'm saying here.
Okay.
The way I am. People won't know what I'm talking about until the movie's out, but that's why we're doing the, one of the reasons we're doing the Bone House scene in the foundation of what was once a building. I just think there's kind of a cool connection.
Mm-hmm.
The old mill, actually the old grist mill down in Zor. Let's get into this. Do you want to start us off?
Well, sure.
Good. Because I only have three locations, and I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, I have one big location and one sidebar.
Okay.
And the reason that I chose this to talk about is that it's a place that I've been with Andy. We used to live within 45 minutes of this location, and it is...
Hold on, read my wife's most recent text.
Oh.
Sorry. Listeners are going to love this, but I can't just let that go.
Did she get a visual on the driver?
I don't know. It's probably Cosmo. Cosmo and Kramer. Okay. Sorry. Totally derailed.
Yes. So, this is a place that we used to live within 45 minutes of in Newark, Ohio. It's the Newark Earthworks whole area down there. And it has been called the largest set of geometric earthen enclosures in the world.
Hmm.
Which is quite a statement, but what you have there are, it's like a whole complex of earthen structures that you can walk around today. There's one place, part of that's called the Great Circle, and that is, just as it sounds, it's a giant circle built in a mound-like fashion, and it's just open to the public. You can walk around and take a hike all throughout the whole area.
I don't think I've ever been there.
Oh, we should go, because they have a really cool museum there, a really great interpretive area. And the more you dig into the history of it, it's very typically the more mysterious it becomes.
Mm.
Because to this day, I mean, anthropologists and archaeologists aren't sure why these structures were built. There's some allegations, of course, speculation that it was a fort-like area, but there's other things surrounding that we'll get into as to, you know, why it was made. This is a National Historical Landmark. In 2006, the state of Ohio designated the Newark Earthworks as the official prehistoric monument of the state. Native Americans regard the Newark Earthworks as a sacred site. And the exhibit details, that's like the museum that's there, and a lot of the interpretive information does detail how the earthworks align with the rising and setting of the moon. That's one of the features of this and so many other ancient architectural sites, is that they are in some way aligned with the changes in the heavens, but in a very sophisticated way, and not just sort of a, it's pointed in that general direction, but it's like precise angles and tracing the various equinoxes and things like that. The earthworks were built by people of the ancient Hopewell culture between 100 BC and 500 AD. According to the website of the monument, this architectural wonder of ancient America was part cathedral, part cemetery, and part astronomical observatory. And then if you hop on YouTube, you'll have people who say that they're also part alien craft landing strip.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Cool. Right here in Ohio.
Right here. It the entire earthworks originally encompassed more than 4 square miles. Over the years, the growth of the city of Newark destroyed many of the Newark earthworks, but 3 major segments survived because of the efforts of interested local citizens. The aforementioned Great Circle Earthworks, formerly known as Mound Builders State Memorial. The Great Circle itself is nearly 1,200 feet in diameter, was likely used as a vast ceremonial center by its builders, or again, as some YouTubers have suggested, a place where a flying saucer landed.
Mm-hmm.
The 8-foot
high... It's round.
It's round.
That's why.
Yep. And
clear. That's where the evidence is leading.
The 8-foot high walls... made of earth, surround a 5-foot-deep moat, except at the entrance where the dimensions are even greater and more impressive. And as one of the videos explained, The 5-foot moat was created by the edge of the flying saucer.
Oh, yeah.
It just created the impression in the dirt.
That's pretty cool, too.
So though. There you have it.
Yeah. Is there any connection between this and the Serpent Mound?
Yes. Okay. And I believe that the same people group is attributed to having built it.
I was just at the Serpent Mounds in December, and I didn't even think to put that on my list.
Oh,
so I don't know if we should mention that. I don't have any info in front of me.
Yeah, I don't either, except I'm fairly certain that Hopewell culture is,
I think you're right,
connected to both.
Yeah, we were so the Serpent Mound is more down near southern Ohio,
right,
if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And we came through there on the way back from filming in Adams County, mm-hmm, for On the Trail Of, and it's just a massive mound that stretches across this huge complex and forms what looks from above like a serpent with an egg in its mouth. And it's believed that the egg itself is like the crater, or is it the whole thing is built on a crater from what they think was
I think it's all the whole thing.
It's all built on a crater. But it's kind of a cool location. And they go into the history a little bit of, in their museum about the area. And I bought a really nice mug at the gift shop. And I bought Tommy a little wooden turtle with wheels on it. Actually, Shannon LeGros bought the mug and gave it to Adrian, and I bought Tommy a little wooden turtle.
Cool.
Shout out to Shannon for the mug.
Yeah. Yeah. the Hopewell culture is responsible. Everyone seems to agree on that. In addition to the Great Circle, there's a huge octagon that encloses 50 acres. Obviously, it has 8 walls, each measuring about 550 feet long, 5 to 6 feet in height. The octagon earthworks are joined by parallel walls to a circular embankment enclosing 20 acres. The weird and interesting thing about the octagon is that it's now on the site of a golf course. So people who play that golf course are actually playing over some of these mound shape, like they've been made into bunkers and hazards and stuff.
Yeah.
But that is, if you look it up online, an image search or on YouTube, those are the images that you see today, is that, from about 1,000 feet up, superimposed over this golf course is a huge, perfect octagon that then leads into another circular shape. Now again, there's questions all surrounding the building of these earthworks. Why? Well, what's the purpose? The massive scale seems to have something to do with astronomical accuracy. The long, straight embankments provide longer sight lines that increase the accuracy of astronomical alignments. In 1982, Professors Ray Hively and Robert Horn of Earlham College in Indiana discovered that the Hopewell builders aligned these earthworks to the complicated cycle of risings and settings of the moon. They recovered a remarkable wealth of indigenous knowledge relating to geometry and astronomy encoded in the design of these earthworks. The octagon earthworks in particular are aligned to the 4 moon rises and 4 moon sets that mark the limits of a complicated 18.6-year-long cycle. And then there's another area called the Wright Earthworks. As I mentioned before, there were 3 major portions of it that haven't been destroyed because of development. This area is close to becoming a World Heritage Site, and the site is one of 7 Ohio sites in a serial nomination of Hopewell Ceremonial Earthworks, the Serpent Mounds being one of those.
Mm-hmm. And Serpent Mound is privately owned and operated. It's not actually a state or national landmark at all.
Yeah.
I don't know if they actually made it sound like they don't want anything, like then on a national scale, they don't want any, the government doesn't want anything to do with it.
Hmm. Yeah. So there's all sorts of, again, speculation about the angles and the geometry of it. Depending on what you look at online, there are some who suggest that the mathematics from an architectural standpoint of the mounds have some pretty important parallels with the Giza pyramid. Mm-hmm. The same exact dimensions and measurements, as well as the angle at which they were built. And I don't know really what to make of that, except to say that they share some of those commonalities. Now, the sidebar to this that I think is extremely fascinating is that there's something called the Newark Holy Stones that were removed from one of these mounds in the 1860s. And this is, if you go to the website of the Johnson Hamrick House Museum, which is in Coshocton, Ohio, the Holy Stones are there to this day. And the Holy Stones were found by a man named David Wyrick in the year 1860. They were digging in one of the mounds in Newark, and they retrieved a sandstone box inside of which was a small black limestone rock that was kind of shaped in the form of an arch. And on this rock, there was a figure etched into it, as well as a writing that looked like hieroglyphics. It was given to various scholars who very quickly identified the writing as a form of what they called block Hebrew. And what ends up appearing, if the, you know, interpreting the block Hebrew, there are four things written on, well, first, there are two things that were found. First is a keystone, which is shaped like a keystone that you'd find at the top of an arch. And in that block Hebrew were written four things, four phrases: Holy of Holies, King of the Earth, the Law of God, and the Word of God. That was discovered in June 1860. In November of 1860, that's when that sandstone block with the black limestone rock within was identified as limestone by two geologists from Denison University, which is right nearby Newark. And carved into that black limestone rock was a figure that's identified on the rock itself as Moses, and the Ten Commandments also appear on this stone. So, of course, there was immediate controversy about this finding. Was it a hoax? Was it not? It led to a lot of questions, such as, you know, was some lost tribe of Israel involved in the building of the mounds? That's a very 1800s sort of religious idea.
I live in Ohio. I've never heard any of this.
Yeah. Oh. And were the mound builders actually Jewish and not Native American? Are the stones genuine relics? Evidently, there are Jewish scholars who expressed an unmitigated belief in the authenticity of these objects. Others said that they were hoaxes. Mm-hmm. But the fact remains that the actual stones remain on display at the Johnson Hamrick House Museum in Coshocton, Ohio. Mm. And then we could go see that.
Yeah, we got to go see them when we're filming.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
So, needless to say, lots of strange and mysterious goings on right here in good old Ohio.
But I mean, it's not that mysterious. I believe they've solved that it was clearly a flying saucer landing location.
Yes. And they even removed the trees so that, you know, the saucers wouldn't sustain any damage.
Yeah, that's nice. Mystery Hill, America's Stonehenge. About 40 miles north of the city of Boston and about 25 miles inland from the Atlantic Ocean is what appears to be the greatest and perhaps oldest megalithic enigma of North America. Mystery Hill, also known as America's Stonehenge, is a site that has puzzled archaeologists for almost a century. Running across 30 acres of hillside are a series of low walls, cave-like primitive buildings, and tunnels that are spread up about with, according to one archaeologist, gigantic confusion and childish disorder, deep cunning, and rude naively. Hold up. That was an archaeologist said that, so that would explain it. While the hill is compared to the English Stonehenge circle, it is, at first glance, physically quite different. It goes through why they're different, but there's all sorts of like weird, what they call the sacrificial stone table and all kinds of things. Where I'm pulling this from, by the way, just to give proper credit, is theunmuseum.com. While we don't know the type of ceremonies that may have gone on at Stonehenge, we do know something about the apparent activity on the hill. One of the main features of the site is an enormous flat stone like a great table resting above the ground on four legs. Around the edge of the table runs a groove that leads to a spout. This great slab has been named the sacrificial stone and certainly may have served such a function. The gutter probably allowed the blood of the sacrifice to drain out the top. Underneath the sacrificial stone is a shaft 8 feet long leading to an underground chamber. It seems reasonable that this allowed a priest concealed in the chamber to speak as the voice of an oracle. To a crowd gathered around the altar, the sound would appear to float up from the sacrificial stone like the voice of some disembodied spirit. In addition to the oracle chamber and the sacrificial stone, the site has a number of other artificial caves and passages. At least one was constructed with a drain to keep them from being flooded. The purpose of the rest of these structures, except one, which appears to be a water well, are unknown. Recent history of the hill starts with Jonathan Patty. Patty was a farmer who lived on the site from 1826 to 1848. There are many different and conflicting stories about Patty, including that he was a robber, ran an illicit still, and operated a stop on the famous Underground Railroad that spirited escaped slaves from the South to safety. One thing for sure is that he used one of the structures as a cellar for his farmhouse. Rumors abounded that Patty had built the structures with help of his five sons for no apparent reason. This seems unlikely, as one of the site stones was found locked in the stump of a tree that started growing around 1769, long before Patty came to the area. In 1936, the site came into the hands of William B. Goodwin. Goodwin had a pet theory that Irish monks had crossed the Atlantic long before Columbus and were responsible for the structures on the hill. Goodwin conducted his own form of archaeology on the site by getting rid of whatever evidence didn't fit his theory. The loss of these artifacts is one of the reasons the enigma of Mystery Hill is so deep. Currently, the site is administered by America Stonehenge Foundation, is open to visitors. A fee used to preserve the site is charged. How old is the site? Pottery fragments have been tested and found to go back as far as 1000 BC. Charcoal from one fire pit measured by radiocarbon dating was found to be 4,000 years old. Who built it? Unknown. The Native Americans living in the Northeast before Europeans arrived didn't build in stone. The colonial farmers didn't arrive in the valley until 730, and we know from the lock stone that construction must have started before 1769. The 39 years in between seem a short time to build such a set of structures, and the sacrificial stone oracle doesn't seem to fit with the colonist religious beliefs. Was the site constructed in ancient times by people we know nothing about? That seems likely. Some theorize the site might be linked to the Greek or Phoenician cultures of the Mediterranean. Certainly, there is a startling similarity between the construction of the oracle on Mystery Hill and those found in ancient temples in Malta and Greece. The truth is, we may never know who built this site. Like your earthworks, there's all sorts of theories about this America's Stonehenge, including that it's part of a vortex. If you look at ley lines, people like to look at the ley lines. This would sit on the same ley line as something like Stonehenge itself. And there's similarities between this aspects of the structure and something like Stonehenge. That's it. I've always been fascinated by this. There's also been Bigfoot accounts near and I believe actually on the same grounds, which is fascinating in itself. I don't know if, have you done any reading on Mr. Hill?
No.
Okay.
No, this is my introduction.
I would go, you can find quite a bit about it, on YouTube. I believe Mystery Quest, which was sort of a side spin-off of Monster Quest, did an episode on America Stonehenge, but there's other shows that have done deep dives into it. I think even, I'm not positive, but I think Brad Meltzer's show went there at one point. The what was that show called? Decoded? Was that what it was?
Oh, yeah.
Meltzer's show, I think, did something about America Stonehenge as well. So I had actually had some knowledge of it. Even Bill Brock.
That was like the first one, wasn't it? Wasn't that the pilot
I believe
the debut?
It might have been. Yeah. No, I think that was the Guidestones. I think the pilot was the Georgia Guidestones.
Okay. Because there was some, one of those shows had some guy like in a box or something or in a chamber and blood was dripping down from above.
Okay, and maybe it was that.
We should.
Bill Brock also has done, did one of his Rogue Mysteries episodes at the America Stonehenge location, but it's super cool. I'd never really bought into the idea that the whole thing was created by the farmer, but there are, the cellar itself looks like it could have been created by a settler. Yeah. Like it looks a little more modern to me than some of the others. Whatever show, and I think it might've been Decoded now that I'm talking about it. did an episode on it. They showed similarities between that structure and Grecian structures that are similar, and there are a lot of like very, very mm-hmm. interesting similarities between the two. Which again, like, I think the most fascinating thing about ancient architecture in general is that we seem to know so little about the United States pre white settler history, but also pre like what we consider Native American history. Like, we just don't know. It seems like we don't know what was going on here, you know, for a couple thousand years there.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that completely. That's who was there before they were. Mm-hmm. And I love the idea that there were, you know,
Vikings,
Chinese. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not as if
we got to get into that. It,
yeah.
The Chinese, is that what it was? It was Chinese,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. There's a interesting Alton, Illinois Piasaw connection that Mark has uncovered. Mark yeah. himself uncovered it.
Yeah. In my clandestine trips to Alton and going in the cave.
You know, I mean, not to get us off topic real quick, but one of the things I'm most excited about with going to shoot the Missouri Monster movie is hopefully getting to go back to Alton.
Oh.
Because I loved Alton. And we never, these places where we go so far to film, like I might never get to go back to Elkhorn, but at least here I might get a chance to go back
right.
to Alton.
Right.
I'll look for the lost Chinese ships while I'm there.
Please do.
Yeah.
Ancient rickshaws.
Yeah. on the streets. look in that alleyway.
Yeah.
What else? What do you got?
Well, that's it for me. My big contribution was the Newark thing. Yeah.
Then I want to talk about, because I think you're going to have input on this, the Rock Lake, Wisconsin pyramids.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
That's not far away from Elkhorn, is it?
I don't believe so.
Kettle Moraine.
I'll read about this. This is from the MilwaukeeMag.com. Unsolved mystery. Are there ancient underwater pyramids in Rock Lake? Rock Lake, at some 1,300 acres in western Jefferson County. Yes, so that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, did you say Kettle Moraine?
Yeah.
Is Rock Lake in the Kettle Moraine?
Yeah.
Okay, I had no
idea. I think.
Here I was thinking I'd really uncovered something. Rock Lake.
Jefferson County, I mean, that's...
That's where the
St.
Coletta's is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rock Lake, it's... Oh, man, can Wisconsin be any weirder?
No, not really.
We haven't even talked. We could do a whole, like, series of shows on Wisconsin, because I'd love to talk about that fire.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Rock Lake, at some 1,300 acres in western Jefferson County, is only about half the size of Pewaukee Lake. Its water is murky, a screen of silt and algae stirred up by the weather. Lake Mills, the town on its eastern shore, has had several businesses with the word pyramid in their names. Pyramid City Driving School, Pyramid Silo Services, and the Pyramid Motel. But you won't see any pyramids above ground. You have to look under the water. The Lake Mills Chamber of Commerce has promoted a legend that large stone structures lie beneath Rock Lake, dating back hundreds of years. The chamber claims Native Americans built pyramids in a valley hoping to end a drought, and the gods responded by filling the valley with water. The modern history of that legend began in the early 20th century when a variety of divers and local fishermen reported seeing structures in the lake that looked man-made. Most famously, Wisconsin diving pioneer Max Knoll dived into the lake in 1937 and came across a stone structure that looked like an upside-down ice cream cone. That's according to the Rock Lake Research Society, a group of divers, pilots, and scientists that launched several expeditions between the late 1990s and early 2000s, resulting in a series of tantalizing photos but no conclusive evidence. The Society and other investigators have enjoyed little to no support from mainstream scientists. Former state archaeologist Bob Birmingham told the Wisconsin State Journal in 2015 that the tales were a bunch of baloney. The structures are just a pile of rocks left by glaciers, Birmingham and others say. In recent years, believers have used sophisticated sonar systems to produce maps of such large shapes as an 18-foot-tall, bent, tent-shaped stone pyramid with a 60-foot by 100-foot base. Whether any of the objects are man-made, they still don't know. So that's just a quick rundown of the Rock Lake pyramids, which are quite a controversy, it would appear. I like the fact that it's almost like cryptids. You know, like there's this... these structures down there, and they may or may not be there, and people are tangling over whether or not it's a some sort of tourism trap, which doesn't seem like it's doing the trick, considering I never even really heard of this before finding these articles last night. What do you know about the Rock Lake Pyramids?
Well,
I'm assuming Linda at some point has written about this.
There's a connection between those, and there's actually a state park in Wisconsin that's Aztalan State Park.
Okay.
And that's in Jefferson County, which is a National Historic Landmark designated in 1964. It covers 172 acres along the Crawfish River. And I don't know where that is in proximity to Rock Lake, but it can't be far. I mean, it's the same county. Mm-hmm. And that has above ground, you know, what are called, what are referred to as
pyramids.
Yeah, I mean, they're step pyramids, essentially. They're called mounds because they don't, you know, they're grown over. Mm-hmm. But there seems to be, in the same county, you know, both above ground and below water, structural things built by somebody.
There's doesn't Michigan have a lake that's called Pyramid Lake or something like that, where they also claim they found pyramids at the bottom, and that's in Michigan? Am I wrong?
I don't know.
I think that's a thing.
Yeah.
Some listener will have to correct me if I'm wrong. But I love the idea of pyramids being found in the U.S. Like, we already know about, like, Mayan culture and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But I love the idea that there could be, you know, like, a history of pyramids being built even in the United States.
Yeah.
And that they're underwater in every single lake.
In every...
Yeah. Okay, well, this covers ancient architecture, I think. What do you want to sum up a little bit about what we talked about? I had one more on my list, the mystery walls near San Francisco, which I'll just run down this real quick.
Yeah, do that.
This was, again, I'm just pulling stuff from websites and reading it, so I feel like a cheat because Mark's actually sitting here going over his handwritten notes. But this was from the Mercury News. If walls could speak, what a tale these mysterious huge boulders would tell. Perched high atop the lonely windswept ridges of the Diablo Range, chains of stacked stones stand sentry above East Bay cities, yet they delineate nothing. Long the subject of intrigue, who built them, why, how? The walls are now being mapped by San Francisco State archaeologist who believes they hold important clues to early California history and deserve our attention and protection. They are historic sites. It goes on and talks about, but basically there's a wall that almost reminds you of like the Great Wall. If you look at the pictures of it, it straight up looks like a miniaturized version of the Great Wall, that run along top of these ridges outside of, San Francisco. And I had never heard of this despite, you know, going to San Francisco. I don't know if they get in to, New Age mystics have declared that their builders were creatures from a vanished Pacific island. Amateur historians suggest that they were Mongols or West Africans. Some theorize that the walls offered a defense from intruders. Others believe they played a peaceful and spiritual or astronomical role, perhaps serving as a solstice site like Stonehenge. It doesn't go too deep into like the paranormal stuff, but I'd like to do a little bit more reading on this too. Native Americans say they historically had little interest in erecting boundaries. In general, our ancestors did not believe in scarring or altering Mother Earth. That's an important thing to note too. They did not deal with stone. Most Native American tribes didn't deal much with stone, especially in those terms, like building massive structures. It just wasn't part of that. I understand they're saying it's a religious thing, but part of that at least had to be the fact that they moved around so much. Like, I don't think that necessarily they were building, you know, stone structures that are going to be there for thousands of years when they're going to move out of the area eventually.
Yeah, portability was important to them. So
my stomach's making some weird, I'm starving over here. So sum up sort of
what we talked about. Well, I think the thing that is so cool on this topic is that there is a deep history to our continent. And if you just go looking a little bit, what you find is that a lot of our state parks and national parks and places of national interest are a response to these places. And they maybe don't get as much publicity as other well-known, you know, areas like the Grand Canyon, for example, but they really do dot our landscape. And a lot of state and even local parks have become a monument to those places. So hopefully that sort of sparks a local interest. And it'd be really cool if our listeners listening to this particular program would kind of, that would set them off to think about, oh yeah, that's sort of the foundation of our local park or a state park that's nearby. It could let us know kind of what the story is about what's right in your backyard.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that is the, to me, the most intriguing and the most, the coolest part of it is that so much of what we're talking about today is within a day's drive of any of us.
We could, yeah, go that check Newark thing, out. I had no idea. I mean, I've heard that name, but I just didn't know that history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so don't forget International Cryptozoology Conference, April 26th, 27th, 28th, and we will be there. See you there. Leave us a rating and review. Send us a mail to, I almost said Sasquatch mail, monsteropolismail@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com and is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.